This is the story of a battle, of a disastrous retreat, and the conspiracy which followed. If you're a really long-time listener, I mentioned the battle briefly in my very first podcast episode. Other than that, I think the way that Maine Public Broadcasting Network named and introduced their 200-year anniversary documentary on the battle sums it up pretty well.
Now, let's start our look at Maine's role in the revolution by going back to Penobscot, the battle no one ever heard of.
Well, right here, but you won't read about it in your history book. Not many American people know about it for that reason, and those that do don't like to talk about it much. They figure it's best forgot.
How come?
Well, people don't like to hear about their country's deceits, you know, even though there were heroes on both sides. Come in Marines, stormed the heights back here in the face of hot fire, drove the British back, tough climb and a hard fight. Heavy losses on both sides.
Heavy losses on both sides would be giving the Americans a little too much credit here. This was a naval disaster of an absolutely epic scale. More than 40 American warships and transport vessels were destroyed. Another American naval disaster of this scale would not be repeated until the Pearl Harbor attacks on December 7th, 1941, more than 162 years later. Back in 1779, when this disaster occurred, at this point in the Revolutionary War, the shots fired at Lexington and Concord in the revolutionary hotbed colony of Massachusetts was more than 4 long years ago. Boston had been almost immediately besieged by colonial militiamen until the British were forced to evacuate their soldiers and loyal colonial subjects away by sea, since the colonial rebels, aka revolutionary patriotic Americans, right, lacked the navy to hold the seas outside of Boston and thus forced the besieged British to surrender. And so as the news of this rebellion spread, it quickly became apparent to King George's cabinet back in London that this was not going to be a small-scale colonial uprising. Some of the king's advisors recommended a quick, decisive, overwhelming blow to knock the rebellion out before it could spread. But King George's Secretary of War advised him that the army alone would not be able to pacify the colonies and that he would need the help of the Royal Navy. The head of the British Admiralty told the king that the Royal Navy was already stretched thin and that there just weren't enough ships to devote a significant force off the coast of North America without leaving the more valuable Caribbean colonies, or even more disastrously, the homeland itself vulnerable to France's smaller but still very formidable navy. And so for the first 2 years of war, Britain fought a pretty half-hearted conflict as she conserved forces close to home. Britain defended against an American attack into Canada, and in turn attacked Charleston, South Carolina, unsuccessfully, and New York City successfully, and then New York became the base of operations for the British throughout the rest of the war. In 1777, the British disastrously attempted to cut the colonies in half along the New York City, Hudson River, Lake Champlain axis, but they only managed to embarrass themselves before getting an army isolated from naval support, surrounded, and outnumbered at the Battle of Saratoga. The surrender of the remaining 6,000 men under the command of General Burgoyne at Saratoga was the final straw that drew the French into the war against their traditional British enemies. The rebelling Americans now had the backing of a great power, and soon required the backing of another, as Spain, and eventually the Netherlands, also declared war against Britain in what was quickly becoming an opportunistic pile-on against an empire which had flown a little bit too close to the sun at the expense of all of its neighbors in the previous couple decades. But still determined to fight it out, the British switched to a southern strategy. In theory, the warmer weather would allow the British Army to operate all year long, and the Navy could offer full-year support from ice-free harbors and rivers to prevent another disaster like at Saratoga, which was only possible for the Americans because the British Army found itself too isolated from the logistical support and evacuation lifeline that the dominant Royal Navy could provide. The friendlier local colonist and Indian population served as an added bonus for this new southern strategy. But shifting the majority of war resources south meant that the British needed to make sure that their non-rebelling Canadian colonies remained protected from another rebel, aka American, overland invasion. And so as part of a defensive strategy in the north, and additionally as a way to provide a refuge to fleeing loyalists who were increasingly being driven from house and home with only the clothes on their back from the fervently anti-British New England colonies, British General Clinton, who now led the war effort in North America, directed that the abandoned French fort on the Penobscot River be manned and rebuilt. This fort was the linchpin of a plan to guard the mouth of Penobscot Bay in northern Maine, which was then part of Massachusetts colony, to prevent rebellious incursions north and to allow the bulk of the British Army and Navy to focus on operations in the south. And so Fort Penobscot itself is at the tip of the triangular Braggadoose Peninsula. This is a little easier with a map, but imagine a bay which has a little triangular bit of land jutting out of it. And at the very tip of that triangular piece of land, there is a French fort in bad disrepair, abandoned in 1704, some 75 years ago. This fort is pretty much positioned to allow it to control the entrance to the Penobscot River, which leads from what is conveniently enough called the Penobscot Bay into the heart of what is today Maine. Did I mention this was a little easier with the map? Oh, wait, I did. And oh, wait, guess what? This is announcement time. I have a new website. Yep, after years of making this podcast, I decided it is time to build an accompanying website. The website is still a bit of a work in progress, but all future episodes will have an accompanying blog post. And this blog post will mostly be a transcript with photos, maps, illustrations, and some other supplementary materials that didn't quite make it onto the podcast for clarity. The web address is usnavalhistory.com, which is also in the show description and in the podcast description. You can sign up there for free and get an email newsletter whenever there is a new podcast episode or website post. Again, that is usnavalhistory.com. The time I spent building the website is why it's been so long since the last episode. I only have so many free hours in the day, and this show is very much a one-man operation and an absolute labor of love, and I want to put some emphasis on the labor part recently. But the show also does cost a small amount of money every month to research, host, and produce. The local library doesn't have all the books I need, and in general, I put far too many highlights and margin notes in my books in any case. And so off to Amazon or the bookstore for research materials it is. And all of this is to say that the show is and always will remain free, as will the website, but I'd love to at least stop losing money every month to produce the show. And if the 50 plus hours of existing content representing many hundreds of hours of my own work over the past couple of years is worth a few bucks to you, there is a voluntary subscription option, and I'd love to have your support at whatever level you're able to contribute at. And again, I know I'm being a real great salesman here with the hard sell, but all the content is going to be free forever. But if you do join at various paid levels, you can get a few small extra perks like a call out on the podcast and the ability to suggest a certain topic within reason. But mainly you get my thanks for parting with a few hard-earned bucks, which I'll go ahead and exchange for more naval history books to produce more podcasts. And so that's the sales pitch. Head on over to the website, usnavalhistory.com, or click the link in the show description. All right, back to the show. Thank you for listening to me play salesman. Check out the blog post for this accompanying episode, which will have a nice map that I made to accompany this episode. Or you can just listen on and try and build yourself a mental map. The cartographic details aren't that vital. So it is summer 1779, and the British send out a small squadron to fix up Fort Penobscot. The British expedition did not go unnoticed, however, and word pretty quickly spread back to Boston, where the Massachusetts legislature concluded that if, quote, a suitable force of shipping, which with other assistance by land, it is thought that they, meaning the British, might be easily defeated. Hint, they were wrong. And so while Massachusetts decided to act, the British began unloading. 700 soldiers under General McLean began unloading supplies from the ships, and the general himself romped around the abandoned French fort, inspecting the firing lines and its position relative to the Penobscot River that he was supposed to be guarding. and decided that, in typical French fashion, that the French had cocked it up when deciding where to build their fort. And so he decided that a new fort would have to be built from scratch a few hundred feet away at the center of the very small Braggadoce Peninsula. That's that triangular one that I talked about, on top of a small hill. This would allow the fort's cannons a better line of fire over the entrance to the river, as well as a little small harbor that was made by the peninsula. And so General McLean issued a proclamation to the local area declaring that A, was under British control, B, those who fought would be hanged, but C, that he wasn't a tyrant and those who cooperated would find him generous. And to back that up, General McLean offered cold, hard cash. The war had been disastrous for the local economy. Actually, it had been disastrous for the entire American colonial economy, but it had been particularly bad in the backwoods of Maine, where Braggadoce was. And the previous winter had been extremely hard, with a large portion of the local backwoods population going cold and hungry. And so the patience for the rebellion at that particular moment was growing somewhat thin in that neck of the woods. And while a lot of families fled south and east away from British control, a lot of the men were pretty eager for some paying work and volunteered for the relatively high wages on offer by the British to help build out the new fort. And so work began and continued day and night, especially when General McLean received news that there was a fleet growing up in Massachusetts that seemed inclined to challenge his position. McLean sent a sloop to British-controlled New York City to request some reinforcements, and in the meantime, redoubled his orders for his soldiers, sailors, and all the hired laborers to work faster, goddammit. And still, by the time the American fleet arrived, the state of the fort was pitiful. The walls were just 4 feet high, stores lay scattered about in the open, and just a single cannon was properly mounted. Forts of this era were usually built over the course of months with a huge amount of manpower in an age where one horsepower meant one horse, and that's if you were lucky, because the alternative was backbreaking human labor if you were not. General McLean did not have many horses and only a single month to prepare, and so he would just have to face the Americans with what he had. And so General McLean, he knew the Americans were coming, and one morning when the fog cleared, he found the entire American fleet of 40 ships right in the harbor. The entire American force had somehow slipped past General McLean's picket boats in the mouth of the harbor during the foggy night. And that's it. This is just the intro. I'm experimenting with shorter episodes, which are much more manageable to make and will also allow me to produce them more regularly. That being said, look out for another episode in just a couple of days from now, instead of my usual you get it when you get it cadence. If you sign up for the website, you can actually get a sneak peek of the next episodes. Again, that is usnavalhistory.com. And other than that, please rate, subscribe, tell your friends about the show, etc. And until next time, fair winds and following seas.